SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. We send you into the holiday weekend with some football before you look at the fireworks and hang out with your families at your backyard barbecues and pool parties for the 4th of July. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. Scott, we never want people to fast forward through the summer. Got to soak it up. Enjoy the nice weather. Get outside. Live it up this summer. But with summer and as Independence Day weekend nears, it is always a good reminder that football grows closer and closer. For our last show this week here on Football Full Circle, we'll set the stage for some holiday programming you can expect around the Sports Grid Radio Network over the next few days. We remind folks that just about 2 months away is the start of the NFL season, Thursday, September 5th, and in Kansas City. And Scott, exactly 2 weeks from today, when we speak on Wednesday, July 17th, we'll have 12 teams already having sent their rookies to training camp. So we're not all that far away from summer break being over in the National Football League as well.
Yeah, it's amazing. I remember as a little kid, again, it's amazing how some of the things just stick in your brain, but my cousin always said summer was over when July came. And I'm like, David, we got 2 months before school started, right? We're grammar kids. Somehow or another, he envisioned July being like over of summer. And it's kind of the same thing here, whereas once it hits July, you know, then you're always kind of looking over your shoulder for when the football season really kind of kicks in and the Hall of Fame games right around the corner and games and practices. And so it's creeping here. You know, it goes by pretty fast, I will say. So in a couple of weeks, we're talking about who's going to show up. That's when the official we're holding out, you know, start. We'll see about Jamar Chase and some of these guys that won new contracts. Let's see if they're willing to hold out. I kind of doubt it. But, yeah, we're right around the corner, believe it or not.
We've got those reporting dates for the rookies first and then everybody by pretty much July 24th and 25th. That's when the National Football League reports for training camp. Scott, the earliest team sending their rookies to camp, that's the Baltimore Ravens. Not even on July 17th, July 13th, we will see rookies report for the Ravens. That's a week from Saturday. Baltimore trying to get a jump start on their training camp program, looking forward to the preseason and beyond, because the Ravens start the season, that opener on Thursday, September 5th, of course, in Kansas City. A rematch of the AFC title game from a year ago. The Ravens, a 3-point road underdog in KC. Scott, those two teams, the Chiefs and the Ravens, two of the three teams around the National Football League that have a 3-digit Super Bowl price, that's 10-1 or less. The Chiefs and the Niners, co-favorites at a 6-1 number. The flock, third best price at plus 950.
Yeah. And how about the Lions at the fourth choice? Just to divert here for a second. The Detroit Lions, did you ever think you'd ever say that, you know, in the course of your lifetime, really, outside of the Barry Sanders years, right, that the Detroit Lions would be the fourth best choice for the Super Bowl? Wow. So, but there's one good thing about the NFL, unlike some of these other sports. Like, all right, the third best choice, Baltimore, is still $9.50. That's a pretty good price. Everybody else is 13-1 or better. And if you gave me, this would be a good bet. Kansas City, San Fran, Baltimore, or the field, I think I'd take the field. So you get pretty good, just from a betting standpoint, you get some pretty good teams at double-digit prices that, to me, have realistic chances of winning, whether it's Detroit or Cincinnati, whether you buy into Buffalo, Philadelphia bouncing back, all getting pretty good numbers on your return.
Yeah, Scott, I would agree, right? It's always the idea of what is value. People look at a big plus money price, a long shot, and they're like, oh, if that team can even get on the doorstep, I can have a cash out or hedge out option. I'm going to see a great positive return on my money. But value might also be a team at minus 175 to win a game that you think they are a guarantee for, and they win it by 5 runs or 15 points, whatever it might be in football. And you go, all right, that's also value because I paid a little bit of juice on on that price, but the VIG wasn't so bad for what felt like a guarantee, and I cashed the ticket. So value always has different things to different people, but I would agree, at least in the preseason numbers, because you won't cash a Super Bowl ticket or probably even see a cash out option on it until the end of 2024, that being the calendar year, or early into 2025, January into February, for when the playoffs begin in the National Football League. But because there's only three teams at 10-1 or less, there are so many teams that round out the top 10, the shortest prices all around the National Football League to win next year's Lombardi Trophy. Because Scott, behind those three teams that we talked about, the Chiefs, Ravens, and the Niners, and you mentioned you'd probably take the field, the next grouping of seven to round out the top 10, starting with the Lions, ending at the Packers, all seven of those teams separated by just $6. 13-1 for Detroit, 14-1 for the Bengals and the Eagles, 15-1 on the Bills, 16-1 on the two teams from Texas, the Texans and the Cowboys. And the Packers round out the top 10 at 19-1. Because of how jam-packed those teams are, Scott, there's more than likely going to be at least one, if not two, if not three, that will play in a conference championship game to challenge the favorites at the moment.
Yeah. Listen, even if you went with Kansas City as your ultimate favorite in San Francisco at 6-1, you know, you compare that to the NBA, your favorite is the Boston Celtics at 3-1. You know, you compare that to Major League Baseball, your favorite are the Dodgers at 3-1. And even your second choice, Phillies and Yanks, are only 5-1. So you'd have to go to your fourth choice in baseball to get the odds that you're getting with your favorite in the NFL. So it does open up. And you're right, your chances are pretty good that one of those next three teams or four teams will be playing in their respective conference championship games. So if you can throw the dart the right way, you know, you get good odds on the NFL Super Bowl winner.
Yeah, Scott, I would have to agree, and I think it's a really fascinating point as well. Again, tying it back to value. Maybe some would believe that KC winning three consecutive Super Bowls is far-fetched. How could you fault them? We haven't seen a three-time Super Bowl champion in a row in the history of the National Football League. Maybe you take the opposite end of that discussion, and you think if there was a year for the Chiefs to be knocked off their perch in the National Football League, it was last year. They dropped 4 of 6 games entering Week 17, looking like they were trying to survive and win the AFC West. Could they do that? Ultimately, they win the final two games of the year, finish with an 11-6 record, but then the playoff picture not nearly as clear, having to go on the road to Buffalo, on the road to Baltimore, and still they prevail with an AFC championship, and of course, upending the San Francisco 49ers in overtime in Super Bowl 58. So maybe, Scott, some people say, hey, the Chiefs, if they were going to have a down year, it was a season ago. I'm buying in once again to Patrick Mahomes. I like the additions they have made this offseason. And as long as Mahomes and Kelce and Andy Reid are all there in-house in Arrowhead, I'm betting on KC. And I still think that 6-1 number, even though you're not going to cash that ticket until the middle of February, is bettable. It's not an unbettable favored price. Like the Celtics at 3-1 in the NBA. Yes, I think Boston's going to be playing in the Eastern Conference Finals next year on the doorstep of winning championship banner number 19. But am I really going to tie up my money for nearly 11 calendar months on the Celtics at a 3-1 price? No, I'm going to look for other spots that could pay off in the long term. I don't think the Chiefs or even the Niners at a 6-1 number is so short it's unbettable.
Yeah, I kind of like the Niners more than I do Kansas City, Ben. You know, it's kind of like last year. If Kansas City gets to the playoffs, and they figure to, but, you know, if they get there, then I'd rather have Kansas City 6-1. But if we're starting from the scratch, give me San Fran 6-1 because, boy, it's never been done. You know, it never is a pretty good trend, you know. I mean, it's tough to bet against never winning three straight Super Bowls, right? Everything's gone their way. I agree with you. I like the things they've done this offseason. I think their team on paper is better this year, Kansas City, than last year. But last year, you know, they were benefit of Herbert getting hurt in San Diego, Buffalo getting injuries and Diggs and not being there in the end. And, you know, there were so many things, Joey B with Cincinnati getting hurt. There were so many things that paved the way for Kansas City to actually get to the Super Bowl. I'm not going to count on that this year. I don't think they get to the Super Bowl. I'd rather have San Fran 6-1.
Yeah, it is crazy, though, because you look at what the trends are. And as Patrick Mahomes has been the starter for the past six seasons in Kansas City, they have played in the AFC Championship game all 6 years and four Super Bowl appearances in that span as well. Plenty more NFL talk up next here on FFC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Back live right here on Football Full Circle. It is FFC. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. So as we look around the National Football League, Scott, here we are on the precipice of a long holiday weekend. It is the summer months, but yes, football never all that far off our minds. We're talking about the Chiefs and the Ravens. 2 months from pretty much right now, 2 months exactly from this upcoming Friday, July 5th. The season will begin inside Arrowhead Stadium between the Chiefs and the Ravens, a rematch of the AFC Championship game from a year ago. KC's win total, Scott, highest in the National Football League at 11.5, and the over has the juice at minus 118. Where do you think, if there is a drop-off for KC, it happens this year? Is it a regular season under where they're only going to win 10 or 11 games, or will they win the AFC West for a ninth consecutive year, but ultimately not be able to get back to the mountaintop as an AFC champ like they have been four times in the last 5 years?
Yeah, you know, if I say they don't win the AFC West, then your next question is going to be, well, who's winning it then? And that's the stumper, you know. So it's hard to make a case that they're not going to make the playoffs, because the AFC West, you know, might be the worst in the NFL if the Chargers really take a regression back. So I'm going to say they might make the playoffs. I wouldn't bet against that, but I don't think they're going to get 11, 12 wins. That I don't see. You look at their schedule, it's brutal. I mean, it's a first place schedule, right? But on that schedule, they play the AFC North, as all AFC West teams do. So that right away, that's a difficult schedule, right? So you throw on Baltimore and Cincinnati. Then they play the Falcons on the road, which is going to be difficult. San Fran's on there. Buffalo is on there on the road. Yeah. Houston is on there, but it is just a war. Tampa Bay is on there. They play 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Eight playoff teams from last year, and then a couple of others that they expect to make this year, or at least challenge, in the Chargers and Atlanta Falcons. So I don't think they're gonna get to 11 and 12. I could see 10. I could definitely see 10 and 7 and win that division with a 10 and 7 record.
Yeah, it is really interesting, Scott, because you mentioned all the difficult games, or at least the playoff opponents from a season ago, on the lineup and the slate this year for Kansas City, but the Chiefs not often booked as the underdog in many of their games. Of course, they will probably be booked as a favorite in most. At least that's what we can assume when you look at last year for KC, 17 regular season games. They had four in the postseason as they won in the Super Wild Card round as a favorite at home against the Dolphins, but then were an underdog on the road from there on out to the rest of the AFC playoffs, the Bills and the Ravens. So when you look at the Chiefs a season ago, normally a team that has been booked as a favorite pretty much the entirety of Mahomes' starting career, that's now six seasons at the helm in Kansas City. Last year, a favorite in 17 of 20 games. Not in the Super Bowl, not in the AFC title game against the Ravens, not against the Buffalo Bills, but every other game, the Chiefs the favored side. It's just really where things have been for KC. But when you look, Scott, and I love to do this at this time of year, is I really start to hone in on how difficult a schedule is going to be, how it pertains to a win total. Our guy, Warren Sharp, lead NFL analyst here on the Sports Grid Network in various capacities, of course, does great analytical work with his team at Sharp Football Analysis. I love his win total projections and how it affects strength of schedule. Because I think, Scott, a lot of people look at strength of schedule. They try to qualify it in their own metrics. A lot of people look at how the team performed a season go. But so much changes year over year from one season to the next. I'm not so concerned on previous performance. I want to know what's expected of that team and how they are projected to look this upcoming season. I don't care if the Broncos were 8-9 a year ago. This year, they're going to probably win 5 games with a new rookie starting quarterback in Bo Nix, just to make an example of that. And Warren and his team have KC with the 12th easiest schedule in the National Football League, right outside of the top 10. It's not just win total projection of the opponents on the schedule. They also do a great job of what affects those betting markets and what affect those betting odds week to week. Rest advantage, home away splits, who has those certain discrepancies with how the schedule makers around the National Football League paired these things together. 6 difficult opponents in a row, all of that kind of stuff. So KC's schedule, difficult based on who is on the slate, but overly not the hardest that we see around the National Football League.
Boy, I'd like to find his reasoning on that. That they have 4 back-to-back road games. A lot of teams, you know, have 1, maybe 2. They don't have 3, but they got a stretch where it's 3 road games and 4. They're playing all different goofy times, Ben. 8 o'clock one week, 4 o'clock the next week, 8 o'clock again the next week. I don't know how that equates to the 11th easiest schedule. You know, they are playing in the AFC West, which I mentioned might be the worst division in football, but outside of those games, and 1 game at Carolina. Everything else is against a really good football team. So, boy, I tell you what, if that's the 11th easiest, then there's the 21 other teams that have just brutal schedules then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, Scott, it is really interesting, too, to look at how all of those things come together, because there are, you know, the metrics and the analytics behind it. There's also what we can see and what we can expect for a season. And I think the division and where things stand currently in the AFC West, the Chargers have the second best win total. It's 8.5. The Raiders at 6.5. And of course, the Broncos, as we shared, at 5.5. Not expected to be all that difficult. For instance, you look at the AFC North, the crossover that the Chiefs and everybody else in the AFC West has to play in terms of that other division within the AFC. 3 of the 5 hardest schedules in the National Football League all hail from the AFC North. The Ravens, the Browns, and the Steelers have the most difficult schedule of all 32 NFL organizations this year. And of course, when you're playing your divisional opponents a total of 6 times, each divisional opponent twice, home and away, that's certainly going to affect what your schedule looks like in a 17-game season.
Yeah, definitely. I'll throw this also at Kansas City. They got 5 games, Ben, where they're going to be playing on a short week. 5. Yeah. I don't know if he took that into account, but because they play Monday night and they play Saturday, then they play Friday's games and goof Wednesday games, Christmas Day. Yeah, I don't think that's the 11th easiest. I wouldn't sign up for that schedule at all.
We'll look at some of the other easier schedules as perceived around the National Football League, and if we agree, up next here on Football Full Circle, how it relates to a win total, maybe a divisional bet, maybe a conference contender. Stay with us here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. We're looking at some strength of schedule metrics today and how it really matches up with what we are seeing around the NFL. Scott, when we look at the 5 easiest schedules, as Warren Sharp's team at Sharp Football Analysis projects for this year, the easiest schedule in the National Football League belongs to the Atlanta Falcons. Then it's followed by the LA Chargers, the Chicago Bears, the New York Jets, and the New Orleans Saints. Really interesting to see the Falcons at the top of this board. Now a minus money odds on favorite to win the NFC South after the acquisition of Kirk Cousins. But it's been an interesting offseason since the blockbuster signing of Kirk. Of course, they drafted Michael Penix Jr. 8th overall. There was the tampering violations that led to the signing of Kirk Cousins. I think there was a lot of optimism initially on Atlanta, Scott, that has maybe been tempered just a tad because of how the rest of the offseason has gone for the Dirty Birds.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting that they have now the Saints and Falcons are in the same division, but they, out of the five teams, you know, there's four different divisions involved, which is a little surprising just because, you know, if a team from one division has an easy schedule, you'd think the team from another division would have just as easy as a schedule. You'll differ a little bit, but not that much. But it does have the four different. Yeah, you don't know what you're getting out of Atlanta, right? I mean, is Kirk Cousins going to go down there and be the greatest thing in the world? I tell you, you know when it all started, man. It all started when they drafted Michael Penix Jr. You know, that's, you know, so if this turns into disaster for the Falcons, to me, they could just look in the mirror to find out the reason why. I understand why they did it. You know, Penix Jr. is great, this, that, what have you, but I wouldn't have done it. I think most people wouldn't have done it. You know, you don't commit that kind of money and that kind of time and everything to one quarterback, and then you draft a first-round pick on another guy when you could have helped your football team, let alone draft another quarterback. So it is a little dicey situation. I'm looking at the schedule. To me, it doesn't seem overly on the top easy. But, you know, to me, a lot of these things are just how well you play. You know, I don't think there's that much different. You know, maybe the top five versus the bottom five, you can really see a big difference. You know, but the middle ground, you know, it's what are you going to, you know, what are you doing with all those other games? You know, it's kind of like baseball. You know, the old saying, everyone wins 50, loses 50. What do you do with the other 60, right? That's probably how it is in the NFL as well. Everyone's going to have two, three tough games, two, three relatively easy games. What are you going to do with the other 10? I'm still debating if I'm buying in on Atlanta. I've never been the biggest Kirk Cousins fan. Regular season, though, he does put the numbers up. But in that division, you know, are they going to be better than Tampa Bay? It would be a disappointment, right, if they didn't make the playoffs. I'll say that.
For sure. Yeah, you know, Scott, it is interesting, too, because even after the acquisition of Kirk Cousins, we were looking at the odds before free agency really began in the National Football League. And I remember thinking to myself, there's a lot of belief in this Falcons team before they even got Kirk Cousins that they would be rumored in the running for Kirk Cousins and kind of baking in the price that the Falcons would be the favored side. And then after the acquisition of Kirk Cousins, four-year deal worth $180 million, I was like, you know what? I actually don't really have an issue with all that Atlanta has done in terms of revamping the offense, the hire of Raheem Morris, who should focus on the defensive side of the football. I don't really have an issue in the NFC South with how weak this division has been the last few years in the National Football League, making the Falcons an odds-on favorite or a favorite to win the NFC South. But the number initially was minus 140. It has come back. It is now only minus 115. I believe the Falcons can even be a minus money favorite, but by no means do I look at the Falcons the same way I look at any other team in their divisional race. The Chiefs at minus 230. The Eagles now a minus money favorite at minus 120. The 49ers a minus money favorite at minus 195. Those are the four divisional frontrunners around the National Football League in the eight divisions. And by no means am I saying the Falcons are going to run away with the NFC South, regardless of how weak the division is perceived to be.
Yeah. They really, you know, we say this about a lot of teams, Ben, but if you look at their lineup on offense, we'll stick to offense. I mean, we know it's Kirk Cousins. You got Bijan. You got decent wide receivers. You got Kyle Pitts, who hopefully will turn into Kyle Pitts. You look at their offensive line, and I always kind of view this as, rather than breaking down game film, which who really does, but it's nothing but first and second round draft choices. Up in, you know, four, the one man, Dahlem in the center, and he's really good, was a fourth round pick, but the other four guys on that offensive line were first and second round picks. I mean, that offense should be good, you know, and supposedly it was the quarterback that was holding them back, you know, the last two seasons. Now that excuse isn't there anymore if they don't do well. So they should be the better of them in Tampa Bay and Carolina and New Orleans. But keyword there is should.
They should. Last year, I had a bet on the Saints to win the division. They did not. The Buccaneers have won the division three consecutive years, two prior with Tom Brady, including 2 years ago with a losing record. But it was Baker Mayfield leading Tampa to the divisional title for a third consecutive season last year. More Football Full Circle up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We're live right here on FFC. It is Football Full Circle, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network. Scott, we shared yesterday, it was the debut of a new season on HBO's Hard Knocks and a new rendition of Hard Knocks for the first time off-season with the New York Giants. We have seen training camp, of course, for the last two decades plus, that behind-the-scenes look at training camp to get you excited for a new football season. The last few years in-season Hard Knocks following a team through their journey through 18 weeks. This is the first time of off-season with a specific NFL franchise. And we shared that teaser clip that was shared to kind of build some excitement for the debut yesterday of Brandon Bean and Dan Morgan and Giants GM Joe Shane talking at the Senior Bowl. And it was when the first idea potentially that Brian Burns of Carolina was up on the chopping block or the trading block. And of course, a deal came together between the Giants and the Panthers, and the Giants ended up paying Brian Burns. Now, I will admit, I did not watch the season premiere last night, but one thing that I think, Scott, that's really interesting is looking at this Giants team and the offseason moves that were made, the decisions through the draft, all of that that really begins in the offseason for a Giants team that is not overly optimistically viewed from the odds perspective this season.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I was working right here on Sports Grid. I was hosting the in-game live, so I didn't have a chance to watch it either. But I did see some stories on it, Ben. And Joe Shane, you know, the GM of the Giants, telling the world, basically, I mean, that's what he's doing. He's throwing cameras around him, right? They're not these secret cameras that he's not seeing. Telling the whole world that, you know, one of the reasons he didn't re-sign Saquon Barkley is because he's given $40 million to his quarterback. And his quote was, I'm not giving $40 million to a quarterback to hand the ball off to a $12 million running back. I mean, I don't know. As I said it yesterday, you know, sometimes you watch these things and it's great. You get great insight and you walk away saying, boy, these guys are so smart, man. Wow, this is why they're GMs and head coaches. And then other times you walk away saying, boy, that's pretty stupid. I mean, what are you telling me? You're not going to go get yourself a big-time wide receiver because you don't want your quarterback throwing the ball to the wide receiver? I mean, the last time I checked, you got to run the ball. You know, last time I checked, Saquon Barkley, you know, was able to catch some passes out of the backfield. I mean, if that's his reasoning, because he's paying $40 million to a quarterback, which at this point is not exactly great, great, great money. It's not chump change, but, you know, it's not $55, $60 million. I mean, that's a pretty dumb statement in my world. I'm not going to pay one guy who can help the football team and be an asset on offense because I'm paying the quarterback so much money. Really? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it was very interesting, right? You know those cameras are in the room. You get that behind-the-scenes look at these conversations that we often do not. There was a clip, Scott, that was shared of Joe Shane speaking with owner of the New York Giants, John Mara, and Mara saying, in a perfect world, I'd still like to have him back. That is in reference to Saquon Barkley. And another conversation with the rest of his front office brass, you get the idea that if they lost Saquon Barkley, what would they do? And that's when Joe Shane gave that as his quote. We've got to upgrade the offensive line, and you're paying Daniel Jones $40 million. It's not to hand the ball off to a $12 million back. He went on to further say that he still has that belief in Daniel Jones that maybe so many others do not. Even quoting as saying Patrick Mahomes behind that O-line would not have success. That's a huge area of concern for the Giants to address the offensive line this year. Instead, they draft Malik Nabers in the opening round at sixth overall. I don't know, Scott, if I'm really out on the idea of Joe Shane correctly running the ship for the New York Giants. Of course, Dave Gettleman was there. Then it's been Joe Shane the last 2 years who brought over Brian Daboll, who was the coach of the year in the National Football League during his rookie campaign at the helm back in 2022. With all that being said, Scott, I really find the New York Giants a fascinating team to follow this year. Not because I think they're going to surprise people or win double-digit games or maybe even contend for a wild card spot in the NFC. The win total for the Giants, 6.5, and the under has the juice. I would completely agree. What I find fascinating is if the odds makers are correct, 5-6 wins at tops for the New York Giants, what becomes of this front office and Joe Shane's job? What becomes of Brian Daboll? What becomes of Daniel Jones after this second year of a his four-year extension that he signed last offseason. There could be so much turnover for this Giants organization if 2024 goes as the odds makers predict, and that's poorly.
Yeah, I would think first man out would be Daniel Jones, right? I mean, there's no, without any money guaranteed for next year, I can't see them bringing him back and paying him another $40 million, which is what he'd be getting. So I don't think he'd be first one out the door. Would the GM or the head coach or both get fired? Probably not, although he did make the decision, even though he didn't draft Daniel Jones, but he made the decision to give him the contract. So and that right. makes him his guy in a lot of ways. So, but I don't know necessarily if that would mean a firing. And they've gone through head coaches with the Giants in the last 10 years. I mean, gee, how many? It's been four or five head coaches. So I think they probably all would survive, but it would be start and bend from complete scratch. I mean, really just... out of all the teams, you might probably come up with a few others, but boy, you talk about question mark and just uncertainty with this Giants team. It doesn't look like they're going to be very good. I'd probably go under that total. I don't think they're a 7-10 football team. I don't. I like Washington a lot more in that division from the secondary teams than I do the Giants. Unless Daniel Jones is like phenomenal for whatever reason, you might see some Drew Lock in there. That's a bad football team. I don't think, you know, I don't think they're getting to seven wins, and I think this has got disaster written all over it. And they're just going to have to – maybe they didn't like getting the quarterbacks this year, and if that's the case, okay, because I, you know, wasn't in love with that many of them either. But they're going to have to acknowledge they're going to have to start from scratch then next season.
Yeah, I agree, Scott. Really, when you look at this team, I think it's a limbo year. I think it's a bridge year. But I wonder who's on the other side of the bridge. Would you, Scott, let me ask you it this way, if the Giants are a 5-12 football team, a 6-11 football team, would you think that Joe Shane and Brian Daboll have their jobs taken? Are they on the hot seat entering 2025? Where do you think the organization would stand from that perspective?
I think they both would survive. Like I said, Daniel Jones would not. But I think the head coach, because like I said, they've gone through so many. They just can't keep on turning it over and over and over. So I think both would get a second chance from the front office. They would have to produce, you know, kind of like the situation with the Chicago Bears right now. Okay, you got a rookie quarterback in 2025, but you got to show us something. You got to make sure that guy, you know, shows enough promise that we believe in you and the whole system and everything else. But I got a feeling, Ben, that both of those guys would survive.
I think so as well, right? They inherited what you could call a bad situation, that being Saquon Barkley, a second overall draft pick on a running back, unheard of nowadays. But, hey, that's what Dave Gettleman decided to do. And then, of course, a top 10 pick on Daniel Jones the year following. So it wasn't great for this New York Giants team. But that's what they inherited and still made the move, as you mentioned, Scott. They had a decision to make after their first year together, Joe Shane, Brian Daboll, with Daniel Jones as their quarterback. Do you extend? Some people felt they were placed in an awkward position, which is not a great way to describe handing a quarterback $40 million, a rock in a hard place type of scenario, where Daniel Jones had the best year of his career under who is considered an offensive mastermind, Brian Daboll, who kind of reinforced and reinvigorated Josh Allen's talent in Buffalo when he took over as the OC there, making him not the sporadic turnover scare, which he still kind of tends to be, but an NFL MVP contender. Could he have done the same with Daniel Jones in that first year? They go on the road to Minnesota. They win that playoff game. It was a celebratory 2022 NFL season. So you pay Daniel Jones. You're on the hook for it. And whether it was the right decision or not, whether it was the guy you drafted or not, there are consequences to be had. We'll wrap up this conversation about Joe Shane, Brian Daboll, and the New York Giants on the other side of the break. Are they given the benefit of the doubt? If this year goes poorly, we'll discuss the G-Men up next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. Scott, we continue our conversation around the New York Giants, being critical, perhaps, of Joe Shane, about to enter his third season as the Giants GM, with his head coach, Brian Daboll, also about to be in year number three. It is year two of Daniel Jones's contract extension that began a season ago. And Scott, one of the shrewd things that Joe Shane did do, despite offering Daniel Jones $40 million a year, was front-loading the contract, $92 million of the guaranteed money up front to Daniel Jones, which means that if things do not work out, and frankly, let's be a little bit pessimistic here, I guess, but just trying to perceive what we're seeing, they have not worked out so far for Daniel Jones, who has battled injury and struggles as he did last year. They can get out of the deal following 2024, which would kind of lead to a blank slate for Shane and Daboll to craft this team back up with a new quarterback, probably drafting early and often in the National Football League draft in 2025. So I would think, Scott, even if the Giants do fall below their win total of 6.5, and again, the under has the heavy juice at minus 150, that Shane and Daboll would be back. But next year, in 2025, would be a very, very warm seat, and they would be banking pretty much all of their chips on a rookie quarterback, whether that's Carson Beck or Quinn Ewers or Shador Sanders or any other college quarterbacks that are making that leap to the next level. It's a lot riding on these next 2 years, and maybe even just this year, for Shane, Daboll, and everybody involved in that Giants front office.
Yeah, and there's one little caveat we'll throw to this in a second. But you look at the Giant history, as I was mentioning before, Ben. You know, pretty solid. Dan Reeves there for four seasons. Jim Fossil was there for six or so. Coughlin was there for a long time, 10, 11 years. Then we got Ben McAdoo for a season and a half, 2 years. Yeah. We'll throw out he was fired the second year, so we'll throw out Steve Spagnuolo. That doesn't count necessarily. Then we had Pat Shurmur for two seasons. Then we had Joe Judge for two seasons. And now we got Brian Daboll for maybe three. I mean, if you want to, realistically throw out Spagnuolo because he was just an interim guy. But if you want to go back to Coughlin from 2015, that would make one, two, three, four, five different Giant head coaches in a 10-year span. So I do think, like I said, he would save his job. However, the one little caveat would be if Bill Belichick calls up the Giants and says, I'm your guy, and he has close ties to Wellington Mara, former Giant assistant coach and everything. Yeah. We all know the history. Would it, after a 6-11, 5-12, whatever year for Daboll, and then Mara says, okay, we're starting all over again. The GM says, I don't think Shane will get fired, but if Belichick did that and said, I'd be there, I think Daboll would get fired.
Yeah, it would be interesting. Bill Belichick will be that big fish next year, Scott, in a couple of spots. Could be in multiple spots in the NFC East, you would believe, especially if things do not work out this year in Dallas. And by work out, I mean probably what is the bar of success this year, reaching the NFC Championship game for Mike McCarthy, as we discussed yesterday, brought back by Jerry Jones, but not given a contract extension, which is rather strange and peculiar. And maybe the New York Giants, of course, where Bill Belichick has some familiarity with the city, with the organization, with the franchise. 6.5 being the win total for the New York Giants. Again, the under has the heavy juice. Scott, as you look around the National Football League, there are not many teams that have a worse win total than that. You look at the lowest win total in all of the NFL at this moment. It's the New England Patriots. 4.5 is the number on New England. The over has the juice at minus 150. A couple of 5.5s out there. The Carolina Panthers featured in there. The Denver Broncos featured in there. The under juiced for the Broncos. The over juiced for the Panthers. You're talking about those teams, Scott, with the five worst win totals, if you will. It's an early look, albeit early, but it's an early look at how the draft order might play next year, right? There's contention for the playoffs by the time we reach late December. There's also a thought of, hey, let's better position ourselves to have a top three pick, top five pick, so we can go get that quarterback of the future if that's what we desire. You would have to think the four teams we just mentioned, Carolina, New England, and the Denver Broncos and the Giants would be in that running, except, Scott, we probably don't think, unless things go really disastrously for three of those four franchises, the Panthers, the Patriots, nor the Broncos are going to be in the market for a quarterback, having selected one in the top 10 each of the past two seasons.
Yeah, although I don't know if I'd say that about Carolina. You know,
right?
If he's, you know, if he's that bad, Rajon is bad, that bad again, I would think they would say, okay, you know what, it's not working out. You know, out of all those over unders, Ben, the one that's most appealing to me, you gotta lay a little juice. I think New England can get to 5 wins. If they got 4 last year with as bad a quarterback play as they had last year, I mean, their quarterback play, you know, outside of Carolina may have been the worst in the NFL. But if they were, so they were able to get 4, new head coach and everything, you know, and Jacoby Brissett, I think, is going to get some playing time, whether Drake May does or not. Eventually, he probably will. But Jacoby Brissett's not bad. He's not great, great, great. You know, you're not going to win a Super Bowl with him, but he's a competent enough quarterback. He's been around the league. He's had some success. I think that's at least a 5-win football team. I really do.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm kind of hoping for, I'm still a believer in Drake May, although I'm not a fan of the New England Patriots. I do really think Drake May was the second best quarterback prospect in this draft class, only behind Caleb Williams. And that's not like I think Jaden Daniels or J.J. McCarthy or Michael Penix Jr. when his time comes in Atlanta, or even Bo Nix, are going to be god-awful. I just really think Drake May is a very talented quarterback. I just really worry, Scott, about this Patriots roster. It is so, so bad across the board. And Jerod Mayo, a defensive guy, hopefully can kind of keep what Bill Belichick did on that side of the football, because they weren't terrible defensively. But with how putrid the offense was, all of the onus goes on the defensive side. And there's just not a lot of talent on that offensive side of the football to surround either Drake May or Jacoby Brissett, who we both believe will start the year as the number one QB in New England. And for that reason, I think we're going to see the Patriots probably booked as an underdog in all 17 games. Can they pull a couple of outright upsets? Yeah, maybe. It's just going to look very different for this New England team in the first year without Bill Belichick, but his final year, he only won 4 games. We'll continue our football conversations up next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. One final segment, a few more minutes for you before we send you into your holiday weekend. A reminder, we won't be live the next few days, although there will be a ton of live content across the Sports Grid Network. If you need your football fix, there will be some great summer specials around college football, the CFT crew getting together, and Pro Football Today around the National Football League. Those summer check-ins, the updates to get you ready and in store for what is ahead for this both NFL and college football campaign. Scott, as we go around the National Football League just a little bit, again, we are not far away from when training camp is going to begin. We talked about how 12 of the 32 NFL organizations will have their rookies report for camp by the time we're 2 weeks from this exact moment. That is Wednesday, July 17th. The first group of veterans to show up for training camp around the National Football League. That happens for the Houston Texans on the same day. That's July 17th. The Bears not all that far behind on the 19th, and then the Ravens on the 20th. The reason it's first the Texans, then the Bears, then the Ravens. We'll start with Chicago and Houston. They play in the Hall of Fame game. That's Thursday, August 1st. Again, we're not all that far away from an actual preseason NFL game. That sure, it's preseason. Sure, it's historic at Canton, Ohio, and that's why we enjoy it for what it is. But it's still a ton of fun to see actual football. That's why the Bears and the Texans show up to camp a little bit earlier than everybody else.
Yeah, you won't recognize any of the players, but you know, it's rare when you even get some normal guys play. But you know what? It's as you said, it's football, it's lines, it's movements. There's over unders. I don't know if they'll put any props out for that. You know, probably. I was gonna say probably not, but you know what? It's football. They'll probably come up with some kind of prop for that game. So it's funny. The 1 year I was out there visiting the Hall of Fame on the way back from Chicago is the year that the Hall of Fame Fame game got canceled. They postponed the Indianapolis, I think Indianapolis Pittsburgh, I think it was. Just my luck as they were renovating the stadium there. Something goofy was going on. Right around the corner, less than a month. You know, and this is kind of why we're all enjoying it, but I'm sure there's a number of players that are like, wow, really? We're not playing until September, and my summer's going to be over, basically, in the beginning of July, middle of March, or middle of July. You know, maybe this is why the Aaron Rodgers of the world do what they do in Miss Minicamp and have these pretend holdouts as well.
Right. You never know, right? You never know what that is. You would think that Aaron Rodgers could probably have his summer vacation in Egypt in the middle of July, not the middle of June. But still, hey, to each their own. That is certainly the case. It's just really fascinating to see, Scott. We already have the Hall of Fame game on the schedule August 1st. There will be a ton of focus on Caleb Williams, C.J. Stroud in his second year for Houston. Everybody hoping that Williams can replicate what Stroud did in his rookie year in the Windy City. We talked about the rookie quarterbacks last week on the show, and not the super of highest bars for Caleb Williams to clear to become the Bears' all-time passing leader. They have never had a 4,000-yard passing season in their history, and it's one of the longest and most illustrious histories in the National Football League for Chicago. C.J. Stroud, Scott, we were looking at this on the early line earlier this morning with Donnie Wrightside, tied for the third best price to win NFL MVP. Mahomes is the favorite, plus 550, 8-1 on Josh Allen, and then there's Stroud and Burrow at a 10-1 price. Joe Burrow, of course, for Cincinnati, tied for the third best number. There were legitimate times last year where even as a rookie, C.J. Stroud was in consideration for the MVP hardware, and that is thought to be the case entering his second year in the National Football League.
Yeah, you know, back to the Bears for a second. You know, just to put that number into perspective of never, and the Bears, as you said, they're one of the original franchises, right? Yeah. There were 10 quarterbacks last year. 10. One-third of the league basically threw for 4,000 yards last year in one season, and the Bears have never done it in 60, 70 years, so it's kind of weird. Yeah, they're, you know, I remember bringing out the C.J. Stroud thing, you know, when people maybe weren't addressing it at the time midway through the season, saying, you know what, you know, the way this guy's playing and the way the Houston Texans are playing, it wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world, so they're really buying in. You know, I will say there's a lot of question marks for year number two of Cinderella stories and Cinderella teams. But, you know, whether it's the win total or the numbers that they got for Stroud personally, throwing passing yards and everything else, they are definitely buying in. I say they, the boys in Vegas and bettors, I suppose, are saying that he's going to have a really good second year. There won't be a drop off.
Yeah, no sophomore slump for C.J. Stroud. More than 4,100 passing yards in his rookie campaign, 23 touchdowns to 5 interceptions. His passing yards prop for this upcoming season as they add Stephon Diggs, as they add some pieces around him, that number is 4,175 and a hook. He's Scott Wetzel. I'm Ben Stevens. Enjoy the holiday weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday.